Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Now, so the topic for the week was called Life and Death?
Yes.
So there's always a difference between a topic and a title. You know what the difference is? A title is what the people want to hear. The topic is what the teacher wants to teach. So we'll try to match them up together. what I want to do in this year is show you how Chumash uses blood as a symbol of life and death. It's really easy, but I want to use it, you'll see as we go on, to highlight pretty much how Chumash works in general, and the idea of behind mitzvot. Think like a 3-year-old, even a 5-year-old, even a 10-year-old. Remember the first time a little kid cuts himself and sees blood? What's the gut reaction?
Yeah.
Like it's like scary, isn't it? Yeah. The question is that something natural or that something trained? You can argue with an anthropologist. But if you look at the macro, before you do any pre-med or bio, whatever it is, you take a human being, put a knife in him, right, and blood comes out. No one knows what's inside the blood vessels, but blood is a symbol of life and death. Not in Chumash, but in life. I want to show you how Chumash takes advantage of that. Anyone know pretty much when the first time you have dam in Chumash? What? There's definitely by kind of anything before that? Yeah? Where do you have it by kind of hevel? It's not in the first day of creation, right?
So yeah. The dam of hevel is screaming?
Yeah, when I think there's a question between, this question comes up a lot in Bereshit. Remember Aye? There's Ayeka for Adam, and then Aye Hevel Achicha. Where's your brother? And remember, what's the answer? Shomer Achon Melchi. And what's God tell him? Almost like we're talking.
Give
me the whole passage. Tamei, it's in Perek Dalet, right? Tamei Achicha from the Adama. Got that? Remember? I hear the voice of the blood coming from the ground. Now, that idea that when someone is murdered, something's happening with the blood, does that ring a bell anywhere else in Chumash? That blood of someone murdered?
Yeah,
we're going to get that. That's going to be our first source in a minute. I'll get out the source sheet in a minute. But something in it's a story later on in Chumash. look if you have your Tanachim with you. Actually, no, but we're gonna get it's be on the source sheet. That's covering the blood. There's what's called Kisui Adam. That's a case there. But there's also a case later on called Egla Rufa. Remember that case when there's an unsolved murder, and we need to do something about this Dam Naki. For some reason, when someone is killed for no reason, they shouldn't be killed, that death is called damnaki, like innocent blood. Okay. So now we'll get to work. the first list I want to do here, I can pass out the source sheet already. It's having a tach is better, we'll pass these around. Everyone have? First point I want to make is as follows. According to Chumash, how do we know that there's a concept of natural morality? Meaning that God has expectations for man that he should know the difference between good and bad. You ever wonder that question? Is man supposed to know what's good and what's right and what's wrong or what's good and bad? Does God have to tell him what's right and wrong, or can he figure that out on his own? But how does Chumash prove it or make that statement? But you follow my question? Is there a concept of good? What? Yeah. But before that, before we get to Am Yisrael. Yeah. If there's a tree of Tov, if there's an Eitz Hadat Tovara in Perek Bet, then there's an absolute concept of good and bad before it's defined. But I think the best proof, that you can argue with, the best proof is story of the flood. Is God unhappy with man's behavior? How do we know? Hey, it says so. He said something about it, and they're punished. More than that, what did they do wrong? It says the people were corrupt. Now, were there any commandments before the flood? None at all. But God still punished them for bad behavior. I don't think you can find a better proof than that, that God expects for man to behave properly, even without being commanded. If that's the case, why do we need commandments? We'll see why in a minute. What happens though, even though there's a certain sense of right and wrong, there's a lot of borderline cases, man needs what's called guidelines. We need sort of things to hold on to, like spikes when you're climbing a mountain, that keep you in the right direction. And then you have to fill in the rest on your own. And a lot of mitzvot are going to form that function. When the flood's over, God realizes that if you don't give some structure to mankind, it's going to go off again. And therefore, when the flood's over, and God says, I'm not going to bring another flood again, part and parcel with that covenant called Brit HaKeshet, God gives commandments, which you guys call, they're called the seven Noahide laws. It's hard. How do you get to seven as a whole story? But we're going to pick up on one of them. That's our first source, after the flood. Okay. First thing God tells Noah is poor, who? And then it says as follows, V'kol remes ashur chai lechem yelochla. Something changes after the flood, and now man is able to eat animals. Before the flood, take a look in Paragala, if you have the time, take a look in Paragala, and take a look at man's diet. According to Perek Aleph, what was man supposed to eat? Is there a specific diet or not? Especially man compared to animal. So take a look. What's the difference between man and animal in Perek Aleph on the sixth day of creation? Right at the end. Take the last three, four lines before Vachulu. See it in Perek Aleph and Breshit? On the third day, God makes Etzem Esri Azera. Eitz Pri Oseh Pri. It's called vegetation. There's what we call Bari Pri Adama and Bari Pri Eitz. Who gets to eat the Bari Pri Adama? The animals. And what's man get to eat? Eitz. And Pri Adama. Man has over an animal. He eats fruit, and animals only eat vegetation. Look how Chumash defines the animal's diet. What's it called? What word does Chumash use for vegetation?
Yeah.
What pasuk is it?
Ramen.
What's it say there?
Yerek Kesef.
The word for food that animals eat in Perek Aleph and Breshit is Yerek Kesef. It's vegetation. But look what happens after the flood. What's God say? Kol remes ashru chai lechem yelochla. Pasuk gimel. Kerek Kesef natate lechem. God now is giving man the right to eat animals. Like what? Why is it called like Yerek Kesef? You ever noticed that before or not?
Let me make sure it's clear.
When God first creates man, the first story of creation, God gives man a diet. He can eat from the fruits of the trees and vegetation. Animals only eat vegetation. And by animals, that vegetation is called Yerek Kesef. After the flood, God redefines his connection to mankind, to his creation, and with man. Now man needs some laws. All of a sudden, man now can eat animals. But eating animals is compared to Yerek Kesef. Now, after the flood, is man upgraded or downgraded?
Downgraded.
Because now
he's like an animal.
You need it.
What? And now, but we're going to have animals that eat other animals, don't we? Some animals do, some animals don't. You know, like for the animals that are korbanot, they eat other animals or not? The animals, they're not animals of prey. The parim and kfasim and elim. It's one of the, we say it's a definition, it's one of the characters of those animals. What's interesting though, after the flood, man can eat animal, and that gives you the impression he's part of the animal kingdom. On the other hand, if you can kill another animal to eat it, what may you be able to do? Especially if he has different colored skin, or daf is in a different shul. Once human beings can eat animals, maybe they can eat other human beings. And this is going to bring up one of the biggest questions in Chumash. which I think is one of the biggest topics in Chumash on a universal level, is what's the difference between man and animal? Or ask Garwood, what's man? What's the difference? He's a super duper ape. Okay. I could look at man as the most advanced animal, but he's part of the animal kingdom. Or I can look at man as a mini god. Now, let me tell you how the Rambam defines this. You've heard of Moreh Nevuchim with the Rambam? He gives an amazing definition, which is really great. He says, when God makes man B'Tzelem Elohim, what's the definition of B'Tzelem Elohim? He says as follows. It's hard to define. He says, take the sum total of what man is. Subtract from that the sum total of what animal is, and that's B'Tzelem Elohim. Or in another way, whatever is unique to man over animal, that's his B'Tzelem Elohim. And therefore we're going to find that man, on the one hand, is shaykh to the gods. There's something godly about man. He's one of them. On the other hand, he's part of the animal kingdom. That tension, what is man? Is he a super duper animal? Not in a positive way even. Or is he a mini god? That's the tension of life all the time. And that, knowing that there's a difference between man and animal, is key. I'll give you an example. It's a pasuk you probably never saw, but it's really neat. Take a look, if you have your Chumash. Look in Vayikra. There's a mitzvah we do. There's several mitzvah we have to remind us that human beings are different than animals, even though it's hard to tell. Especially in New York. Take a look in Vayikra Perachaf. You never saw this before, don't worry. Vayikra Perachaf. Hold on, Rayo. Perachaf and Vayikra. Pasuk Chafei. There's like really nice pasuk there. Who wants to read for me Pasuk Chafei in Vayikra? Yeah, read it, Ilana.
Okay.
Vayikra Perachaf, Pasuk Chafei. I'll translate. What are we commanded to do? It's summary pesukim about keeping the Torah. We have to differentiate. Not separate, but differentiate between a beima Torah v'tmea, which is the story of the flood again, isn't it? Ubeina ofa Torah v'tmea, in between a clean bird and an unclean bird. Keep going for though.
Like,
no, there's certain animals you can eat, certain animals you can't eat. Now, Perikid Aleph has the details of what you can eat, what you can't eat. But this is a summary pasuk. Now listen carefully. Pasuk Chavav. Kikadosh ani Hashem. Keep going. What's going on? Vitem li kadoshim kikadosh ani. Remember, Kadoshim to you was the previous parsha? You have to be holy for me, or you have to act according to your holiness, because I'm the one who's Kadosh. And what did God do? Va'avdil etchem min ha'amim li. You understand what's happening with kosher, with differentiating between kosher animals and non-kosher animals? What does that train us in thinking? There's a difference between species. And recognizing that there's differences between species will help men recognize there's a difference between man and animal. And one of the jumping stones, or stepping stones, for man to realize there's something godly about him, and he can connect to God, but it's something he has to develop, is realizing that there are differences in nature. What the Chief Rabbi calls dignity of difference. That's within mankind. But between man and animals, there's a difference. There's a quantum difference between man and animal. Man is supposed to recognize that, and based on that, he's going to help him find God. Now, remember Abdullah? What do we say there? Hamavdil? Ben Kodesh L'cho, Ben Or L'choshech, Ben Yisrael Amim, Ben Yimashvi. There's a need at the human level to recognize the difference between man and animal. But I want to take this far away from racism. There's also within human level to realize there's one nation whose responsibility is to represent God, and God separated them, not because they're better, but to be better. The idea of always paying attention that there's differences, again, we'll call it dignity of difference. So we'll go like Rabbi Sacks, not like the racist approach. That there's a value in difference. It's okay to be different. But recognizing that your difference is for a reason, and God chose you to work for it. Recognizing that goes part and parcel with man's need to recognize that there's a difference between man and animal. And that enables man to eat another animal. And that enables korbanot in general. But part of the idea of korbanot is man recognizing that God made animals pretty much in the service of man. Now, that's a big argument in philosophy. Ask your local veggie. Is it moral to kill an animal to eat him? Now, people can argue it's immoral to mistreat an animal. But for eating, people seem to have less of a problem with that. But the very idea that man can kill animals to eat them, but he can't kill another human being, that's a big jump. Yeah, question?
No, I was just like, you said ask your local veggies,
so I was just thinking. And there's logic to it. There's Chazon Tzimchanut of Rav Kook, who talks about that we'll go back after, when the time of Mashiach, we're going to go back to the pre-flood times, when man was just a veggie. But then there's a big argument up until then. Is it better to be a veggie, not to be a veggie? There's people who are only veggies during the week and then out on Shabbos. Now, look what Chumash does. Look at the next line. First we define that man now can eat animal, not Ibram in Achai, but he can eat that animal. And this is, Miyad Adam, Miyad Ishachiv Edrosh Ed Nefesh Adam. When does the commandment, or how is the commandment of not to kill, which is the main mitzvah of the seven Ochet laws, the opening one, the main one, is about killing. As soon as we're told it's okay to eat animals, the next line is, you can't murder another human being. And got that? That's awesome. That tells you that the ability to eat an animal, the heter to eat an animal, comes with a warning, you can't kill another human being. It's definitely not to eat them, or you can't kill them at all. And then look at Pasuk Vav, which is the first obvious chasm in the Bible. This proves chasms. See Pasuk Vav, how he wrote it? Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishofech. Everyone's seen that pasuk before, haven't you?
Yeah.
Do you notice how chaotic it is? Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishofech. Can't miss it on the way we wrote it. And look at the seifa, look at the end of the pasuk. Why? Ki betzela milim asata adam. What's Chumash saying? And here I think is the main presentation of the concept of dam. When you kill a person, what represents his death? Shvichat dam. The pouring blood. Now, where do we have the same word of shvichat dam? Where in Chumash does the idea of shvichat dam come up a lot? What? Shvichat dam means murder. But we'll get to Har Sinai in a minute. Is it going to be on the page? Take a look in. we'll get that part later on. But on the korbanot, the were shofech the dam on the son of the Mizbeach. The damoy, I think we had it also last week. And when you bring a korban, we call that shvichat dam as well. Not we're killing an animal, we killed an animal, but then you put it on the Mizbeach and that allows you to eat it. Now, notice when the idea of man coming to the Beit HaMikdash to become close to God almost always comes part and parcel with bringing a korban. What's the logic of bringing a korban to God? God doesn't need to be fed. There's something symbolic. But if you're standing in front of a korban, and what do you do to it? First you do smicha, and then you do shchita, and then you get, the main thing is kabbalat adam, and the dam is spread on the mizbech, and the rest you pour at the bottom. And part and parcel with coming closer to God is reminding yourself that there's not much of a difference between you and an animal, because what do you do to the animal? You cut it open. You see its innards. If you ever went to biology, you guys are in college. Anyone doing a biomed? Who's that? Who's majoring in bio? Someone told me they were before. Okay. Have you dissected animals and stuff like that? There isn't that big a difference between humans and animals, isn't there? Biologically, and look in the genes, there's only a tiny little, in the chromosomes, it's only a tiny little, it's more similar than different. But that difference is critical. And therefore, if we need a reminder of that man is different than animal, he has an neshama and animals don't, a korban is a great reminder that you could basically, you're almost an animal, but you're a step above it. Now, let me explain something. When someone is born, can he play piano or not?
No.
But he has the ability to learn how to play piano. It's a latent trait, but it has to be taught and developed. Now, do you have to teach someone how to eat? Maybe you can teach them how to eat properly. But you don't need, you're not, every human being who's born instinctively knows how to eat. It comes, that's called, you know what this thing is. You don't instinctively know how to play piano, but you can learn how to play piano. Now, that's the big question. When a human being is born, is he instinctively godly, or is being b'tzelem Elohim something he has to develop? Or so what we call ruchaniyut. Is every human being born, I'm not talking about Judaism, I'm talking about human beings in general, if every human being has a potential to be godly, to connect to God, does that come natural, or is that something that has to be developed? And that's a big question. I think what Chumash is saying is every human being has a potential to be ruchani, but it's something that has to be developed, and the way we develop it is through keeping mitzvot. And what it comes out is that if you're born and you never develop your ruchani side, you're what the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Adam bikar b'levin nimshal kemot nidmu. Then you live a normal life, but you're like an animal. Human life is an opportunity to become godly. How do you become godly? By keeping Torah mitzvot. Yeah.
Wait, so how is that shown in Torah? By having mitzvot, then you know that it can only develop?
No, that helps you develop it. It comes through thought.
And how do you know it's not natural?
Because most people don't come to it. I'm pretty much following the Rambam. If everyone did it, it would be natural. If people learn about it, do it. Now the question, what does it mean to be spiritual? You know, is listening to music, you know, just could be something spiritual. Then how do you find spirituality? What I think is, Chumash is using Dam as a symbol of not only that between life and death, but it's a symbol of the godly nature of man. What's my proof? Right here. Shofech dam adam badam. Don't make shofech. Keep it sending him asat adam. Don't you realize what Chumash is saying? If you kill another human being, it's not only offense against another human being. If man is created in the image of God, then killing another human being, you're doing something against God himself. It's turning every ben adam l'makom, every ben adam l'chaver into a ben adam l'makom. If you don't understand there's a godly potential in every human being, then when you kill another human being or mistreat him, you're basically doing an offense against God. And if you can see in every human being something godly, then the way you treat that other human being is a different ballgame. And Chumash again is going to use this idea of Dam as what I call its symbol, not just of life and death, but the idea of the godly nature of man and that ability to become godly, to the point that when we want to come close to God, the act of it comes to God goes hand in hand with bringing a korban. And Sefer HaChinuch, I think, goes very, it's a very nice explanation of that. That when you stand in front of a korban, you see the animal dissected. And hey, he's got a heart, you know, with legs, you know, limbs, he's got lungs. So I don't chew my cut, he does. But the basic parts of the animal are very similar. A person has to realize, oh my gosh, I'm very similar to an animal, but I'm different. And that realization is the first step towards finding God. Now, where do you have this phrase again? Take a look in Source B. Later in Sefer Bamidbar, we have the laws of cities of refuge. You're familiar with it? Arei Miklat. Each book in Chumash has a sin that causes God to leave man. We're going to read this week in Parshat Ki Tisa. What's the big sin in Sefer Shemot? Okay, there you go. And what's God say? I'm not going with you. When Amisar sins with Chet Ego, God says, you're not my people anymore. The breed is broken. Everyone knows the story. And God tells, first he wants to kill them all. He says, okay, I won't kill you, but I'm going with you. And then God has to make a new breed. And Moshe argues and has to bring Midot Rachamim that enables God's Shekhinah to return. Avodah Zarah causes God to leave us in Sefer Shemot. But we just read in Sefer Vayikra with the Arayot, in Perachaf, also in Perik Yudchet. What will cause God to leave in Sefer Vayikra? Arayas. Incest. You know what the Arayas are. We read on Yom Kippur. That type of behavior. And what's interesting, like Mishka Behema. If that's how you're acting, you understand why that causes God to leave? You don't understand the godly nature of man. If man's sleeping with an animal, then you're not going to become godly. It says God will either kick you out or either he'll leave or you'll leave. In Sefer Bamidbar, what causes God to leave? Murder. You follow? Those sound familiar? Avodah Zarah, Gila Arot, Shvichud Damim, Yichabtet, Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar. Also, the end of Sefer Shoftim has all three sins: Pesamicha, Pidagish Begiva, and Mechamed Binyamin. And those are the big three. You've heard of the big three. No. In the summary of the Tzukim of Ari Miklat, remember, if you're about, we want to make sure even unintentional murder, you have to go into exile. You understand the meaning of why a human has to go into exile if he murders? Because murder is going to cause God to go into exile, or us to go into exile. This is what it says here. This, who's going to read for me? This one? Someone read on the other side? I want to read on my simchonit, my veggie. Okay. Tonight wasn't good for supper, was it? Place except every night here? Source B. Source B. Source B. Be like boy. I mean, be like business. Okay. Hebrew's good. What you want? If someone is supposed to be put to death, has a death sentence from the Sanhedrin or from the Beit Din, he says, "Listen, why kill me? I'll give you $1 million. You can build a nice building, build a new campus, shuttle buses, the whole thing. But just I'll donate all that money, but just don't kill me. It's a win-win." That says no. That's taking culprit. You can't take ransom money. Someone should be is found guilty. You have to do the punishment. Okay, and then continue. What happens if you take? Okay, below. Does that ring a bell? Doesn't that go back to Breshit? What's God saying? If there's a murder, the land won't be happy or won't be atoned. And that's what? I need the blood of the murder. We can't have an unsolved murder. That's why we have the same wording in Sefer Dvarim with Egla Rufa. Now, if I don't find the murder, what do I do? Who's responsible? But the leaders of the community, therefore they have to shech this Egla Rufa. And God leaving. And then we wash our hands over the blood. And then thematically speaking, we're saying the blood of the once the elders of the community, who should have done a better job, have to take administrative responsibility, then that becomes the damada of the Rotzeach. And that'll quell they're supposed to learn a lesson from what happened. Now, what's it say here again? Okay. Now, pasuk lamed dalet. Below. This is a perfect pasuk for the end of Sefer Shemot as well. What's he saying? These two can't go hand in hand. If this is the land that you're living in, but the land that I'm dwelling in, what's that mean? If we build a mishkan for God, if we're God's people, the symbol that we're God's people is the mishkan or later the mikdash. That's our symbol that we represent God. If the country that represents God has a society that people can get away with murder, if there's an unsolved murder, that means there's something rotten in the community. It just can't be that a nation representing God, in a nation like that, people can get away with murder and not get caught. If murder, something that's accepted in a society, says God can't dwell there. I'm not willing to allow you to build an apartment. I'm not going to dwell in a society that allows murder, or people can get away with murder. And therefore, if murder happens, I'm out of here. And if it does happen, we have to go crazy. Remember the whole Egla Rufa routine? We go berserk. We have to make a big deal about it. Now, you understand that idea? In order to be worthy of representing God as a nation, we have to have a community, a society, where murder is not accepted. Now, murder includes car accidents, people driving like not safely, because that's probably the biggest example of damnaki. Like in every country, but especially in Israel. Hundreds of people die every year in car accidents that could all be prevented. Not to mention, domestic violence and things like that. That's part of an education system that the community is responsible for. The community, if people drive wild and people do it and people don't stop it, that's a communal responsibility. But that means people don't care about life. Other things are more important, like getting to show on time. No. You appreciate that idea I'm trying to get across? Therefore, God says, if you're shvichu dam, I'm out of here. A quick question? Yes? Okay. No. Look on the last page. What do we have done against the symbol? At the big moment in Jewish history, we call 24/7, where Am Yisrael says Nasa v'Nishma Sefer Shemot, and if the biggest theme of the Bible is this covenant between God and the people, and the symbol of that covenant is when we say Nasa v'Nishma at Har Sinai, what do we do there? Moshe writes everything down on the bottom of the mountain. See Pasukei? Vayishlachet Narei Bnei Yisrael v'yalu olot v'yisbechu zbachim shamim, v'yichach Moshe chatzi adam v'yasem baganot v'chatzi adam zorak al mizbeach. Half the dam he puts into big containers, the other half he puts on the mizbeach, and then he takes it for a breed. He reads it out loud, and everyone says, "Asher diber nasa v'nishma." And then, "Vaykach Moshe et dam v'yizor kalam v'yomer hinei dam abrit ashekrat Hashem yimachem al kol dvar me'ila." Sprinkling blood on the people is a sign that we accept this breed to be Am Hashem. Why dam? I wanted that to be the key point of this year. At Har Sinai, which is the event of the Bible, not just that God gives us the Torah, but we enter a covenant to be God's people. Moshe reads the terms of the covenant, Sefer HaBrit. The people answer publicly, Nasa v'Nishma. We have a whole ceremony, a Kiddush. The leadership group goes up the mountain to accept. And everyone in Har Sinai, we saw you there, has blood sprinkled upon them. I don't want to say we're baptized because another religion stole the idea from us. The medium that Chumash uses to describe accepting a brit of representing God is the sprinkling of blood. And from that time on, every time there's sprinkling of blood in the temple, it's going to represent this theme of Nasa v'Nishma. If you remember in Parshat Tetzav we had last week, the 7-day inaugural ceremony. Remember we put blood on their on the earlobes, on the thumb and the feet? Nishma, Naseh. The sprinkling of blood on the earlobes and on the hands and on the feet, that goes back to Naseh and Nishma as well. Again, in the Kohanim representing the people. Now, one last part. I want to bring this to home. Yeah.
Wait, what did they sprinkle blood on the...
Shnuch, Ozen.
For what?
There's a 7-day inaugural ceremony that turns the Kohanim into Kohanim. So if you're going to represent God, we need to do something symbolic that shows your thing. You have later, you have I think Asher Mitzori have something very similar. That's too complicated for now. The last part I want you to take home with you is how this concept explains kosher meat. It's not only about the time of the temple. According to Chumash, even though we're allowed to eat meat, if I follow Sefer Dvarim carefully, it turns out that whenever I eat meat, it should be a korban. You're familiar with that? At the end of chapter 12 in Sefer Dvarim. It's source E at the end of it. If you follow in Sefer Dvarim, in Perek Yudbet, Parshat Re, it's during summer vacation. If you follow it carefully, it says there, when you bring a korban shlamim, you bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. Then it says, if the Beit HaMikdash is far away, when God... widens your borders, and it's very far away. It's far away, and you can't go all the way to bring a korban. Then it's okay to eat animal outside the mikdash, and that's called chuli. Understand? According to Chumash, ideally, every time you eat meat, it should go hand in hand with remembering. If you're going to eat meat, don't you understand the chap from the beginning? If you're able to eat meat, that's a reminder there's something godly about you. It's your godly nature differentiates you between man and animal. And if I'm going to go and eat meat, I have to remember that there's something godly about me and there's a reason why God enables me to eat meat. Now, we can't bring a korban every time we eat meat. It's called basar chulin. What do we do instead? The same thing we would have done if it was a korban. Because if it was a korban, how do we kill the animal? Through what means? Shechita. And the shechita, which is kosher for a korban, is the same shechita that's necessary to eat meat. What else makes kosher meat? It has to have kosher shechita. And even if you do kosher shechita, it's not kosher yet. What else do you need to do?
Take out the blood.
You have to take out the blood. Why the blood? Because the blood belongs on the mizbeach. And you can't eat the entire animal. What part of the animal can't you eat? The chelev. Why chelev? The part of the animal, of a korban shlamim, that would go on the Mizbeach if it was a Korban. That's what you can't eat. You understand what kosher meat is? Kosher meat is simply whatever belonged on the Mizbeach, which I call the high cholesterol, the blood and the chelev. You know what the chelev is? Chelev. Open up an animal one time. Don't do it to you. There's around the abdominal cavity, there's this glob of chelev, of fat. It covers the whole thing with the kidneys, the whole thing. They just, when they open up an animal and they took it out and put it on the mizbeach and burned it, it smells really good also. Like a good, you know when you're frying oil on a but real schmaltz? Get that. That's the reich nechoach that happens on there. But any part that would be on the mizbeach is what you can't eat. Now watch how Chumash says that. Look in D. What can't you eat? Whenever you eat an animal that could have been a korban, what do you need to do? You have to shecht it, and the chelev and dam can be eaten. Which means that if this is your reminder that you're God's people and you represent God, and that's the meaning of bringing a korban, if I don't respect that, what's my punishment? Correct. What I'm getting at is that bringing korban, there's something covenantal about it, which we should write back to Har Sinai. For example, the symbol that we are at Har Sinai in the realm of time is Shabbat. Remember Shabbat is an oath brit? And if someone is mechalel Shabbat, means he doesn't respect Shabbat as a symbol of Har Sinai, then it's not a punishment, it's a consequence. The consequence of not respecting Shabbat, which we call Chilul Shabbat, the consequence is, what's the consequence? Correct. It's not a punishment, it's a consequence. If you don't respect the covenant, you're cut off from the covenant. And if blood is going to be the symbol, not only of our humankind, but our covenant to be a nation representing God, then if I don't respect those laws of Kashrut, of Dam HaChelev, then I don't recognize the importance of what it means to represent God. And even though when we buy kosher meat, we just simply go to we go to the store and look for that OU on it, or whatever that Rabashkin, forget the name. That's a political topic already. There's something that if you were living at a time when people shechted their own animals in the backyard, like they used to do, and when you shechted an animal, you drained the blood and you took out the chelev and you knew what a kosher animal was. It's a very powerful experience, and that blood again becomes a symbol not only of life and death, but of our connection to God as a nation, and the concept that man, there's something godly about man, and that man needs to take that understanding that man is different than animal, and that's the first step in his understanding that he has to grow spiritually. There's two elements there. The essence of religion, that man has a potential to be spiritual, to be religious, and Dam is a beautiful symbol of that ability. And then as a nation representing God, going back to Har Sinai, that we have to represent that concept to mankind, and hence the concept of kosher meat. Yeah, quickly.
But wouldn't it be the opposite, that eating meat would make us lower if it was something that God had to impose onto us? Like, why did God allow us to do it before he didn't allow us?
Yeah, so...
And that it's after we
get paid. Question's right on the mark. We call this in Kabbalah, sort of, it's Yiridah L'tzarach Aliyah. That's why Rav Kook would understand it. I got to go down to bring myself back up. You know, to show that we're godly, but on the other hand, we are like animals. And therefore, we throw ourselves into the animal kingdom and then bring ourselves back up. So once we're in the animal kingdom, that was our own choice after the flood. We're more similar to animals. Do, for example, Targil with students. Have one day write a composition how humans are similar than animals. And then have another composition the next day how humans are different than animals. And see what's the majority of. It seems like in Gan Eden there was a total difference between man and animal. They weren't on the same... That's all story with the Nahash. After Gan Eden, man gets cat, and for sure after the flood, man is more like an animal than like God. And now once he's in the animal kingdom, he's got to jump himself out. And where he can use the symbolism of blood, assuming that you're Mushrash, you're in that animal kingdom, so you have to work your way out. So you're in there, and then I need to do something symbolic to show that I'm above it. But not eating meat at all, maybe that's an ideal, but that's not realistic. I'll give you one last example, then I have to go. Abdut is not good. It's not good to have, you know, have slavery or even servitude. But it's a given. So Chumash doesn't say slavery, not slavery, servitude is forbidden. It says servitude is a way of life. The haves and the have-nots. Chumash tells you, alleviate the suffering. Be nice to him. Be kind. Remember you were strangers. Remember you were once servants. People work for other people. You're not going to stop that, but you can be kind and benevolent, and you can, I can alleviate the suffering. I mean, you're part of the animal kingdom. Take that as a stepping stone to realize there's something you have to raise yourself above it. It could be the idea might be to be a tzimchuni. But that's a big argument. But in the meantime, we're humans, and we go out to eat. We have, you know, simchas, we eat fleishiks, and Shiv University, every night they say there's fleishiks for dinner. That's part of life. So the last source, when eating meat, you can and eat. Ishish, I take a look in Perek Yud later on. Again, ki nefesh ko basar damo benafshohu. V'amad yom yisar dam lo gam ko basar lo tochelu, ki nefesh ko basar damo ko chlavi karet. Rach v'zach v'yotech adam, ki adam ho nefesh, lo tochel nefesh ima basar. Over and over again, Chumash has this law against eating dam, because it's what it symbolizes, and that's going to be our symbol of life. But symbol of life in the way that reminds us of how we're different, not just of life, but the spiritual nature of life. And because, again, going back to how we began, it's such a, at the macro level, you hit a body and blood comes out. It's a symbol of life and death. Chumash used it not just as a symbol of life and death, it's a symbol of the purpose of creation, man's connection to God at the universal level, of having to grow spiritually, but also at the national level of the nation representing God. And therefore, in our Mikdash service at Har Sinai, and bring Korbanot, the sprinkling of blood becomes something symbolic and reminds us not only of our spiritual potential, but also of our need to represent God, and hence to be Kadosh. And therefore, that pasuk in Vayikra, V'kadisha v'tem korshim, v'abdil etchem min amim v'odli, right after, v'vdatam bin ha'beimah tomea v'torah. Recognizing there's beimah tomea and torah, there's differences, using the differentiation, that dignity of difference, and using it in my spiritual growth to understand that man has to grow in the service of God. And then you can become spiritual and become eternal that way. It's like the basics of it's life and death, but it's also eternal life, once you understand how Chumash works. I'm sorry, I have to run real fast, but thank you so much. We'll be in...
Thank you.
There's source sheets from Rosh Chodesh here, if there's anything that they're ashamed of, that's from sure I gave somewhere else, so you can use them.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Lee Jack. And don't forget about the rest of us, Bob White.
Okay.
Cheering just coming. There's people coming here. Yeah, guys, there's pizza in the back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.